Well, let's run it again on you. We are, in fact, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we have an incoming phone call. You're at 96.3 FM, and we're going to actually have a caller. Let's hear what our caller has to say.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi there yourself. Your caller has to say, could you repeat the date of that court filing again, please?
Yes, it's October 26th. This sounds like Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, the infamous
sometimes
housing
it
now.
Is. Sometimes it's the cat in the hat.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Betsy. This is a good show.
So you actually did the last show, didn't you? You were the host on Bathrop's Broadsides.
We did it in.
We didn't even get into welfare rights here today.
I know.
Well, why don't we start while we get, I guess, Becky, you only had
an
hour.
That's a big topic.
Well, yeah. I think welfare rights are like civil rights, you know? It's like, it was nice when we had them, and look quick, they'll be gone in another few weeks.
It's
bad for our state anyway. It's going to be so bad if Clinton doesn't veto this thing.
Veto what thing?
What they're calling welfare reform. The two pieces of Congress have come up with this thing that's basically grossly discriminating against teenage women who become parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And otherwise, just a cruel way to go about scaling back, and a thoughtless way to go about scaling back.
When
cuts are inevitable for everyone in the country that has children.
One of the things that I've always said is to kick newborn babies off of welfare is the work of deadbeat legislators.
Yeah.
Right, with dead hearts as well.
Yeah.
We've heard of the dead heads, now we got the dead hearts.
I'd love to see some of these internet people get the goods on the people we've elected to Congress and
how
many ex-children they don't support, all of them, because they're mostly men. There's a reason for that.
Well, why don't we talk a little about welfare, starting with you, Becky, since how much time have you got? Have you got a little time?
I'm meeting almost immediately, but we do have one, what I think is a very likely solution to the welfare problem, and just like to put it out there for people's minds to think about. Let's have a negative income tax.
Yay.
And then we could just dissolve the whole welfare program and the food stamp program and the WIC program and Medicare and CRUZ, and just have people have sufficient money so that they can go out and purchase these things themselves. They could afford housing, and it would be administered through now the IRS, which is a bureaucracy we already have in place. Rules that we've already agreed upon say that is that, you know, if you have so many dependents and you have so much income, you're responsible for so many taxes. What you would get from the IRS if you were a low-income person is, instead of getting a bill, you would get a check. Since, say, the welfare is, the monies that go into administer welfare is about 80% bureaucracy and only about 20% that actually results in benefits to the recipients, who the whole programs are designed to serve, we could save that 80% by just abolishing it. Those 20% of benefits that people are currently receiving, we could double that. We could make that, you know, say a person, a family of four with, a single mom with three kids, family of four, would be getting about $17,000 a year.
You're receiving welfare yourself, Dennis?
Yes, I am an AFDC.
Now, what's going to be the impact? And you are too, right, Linda?
One of my children, my youngest son, is on AFDC right now. I'm on SSI. I've become disabled by trying to survive on AFDC.
What is your disability?
Well, I have a compound of disabilities, which most people who actually get uncomplicated SSI have more than one serious medical problem where they're having trouble having it recognized these days.
All these programs are being cut to the point where they only represent a portion of what people actually need to survive on.
Well, they never did meet the needs of the people anyway.
Yeah, but they did come from somewhere. 20 years ago, at least in California, I don't know about the other states, they figured out what it costs to live. They looked at what rents cost. They looked at what groceries cost on an average scale in this state. And then they set up that much money in the legislature, and of course they knocked 20% off. So they started this program mm-hmm. out giving you about 80% of what it cost for to live in poverty, to not have any money for cigarettes or not more than 3 loads of laundry a week.
Uh-huh. And that would actually be illegal for you to have money.
Yeah. But now I like Becky's idea, but it's going the opposite way of public thinking in this country. She's talking about a kind of federalizing and another part of the infrastructure that's there for it.
Well, I just want to go along with Newt Gingrich's idea of let's end welfare as we know it.
Well,
I'm all for that.
I think your theory does execute the spirit of Gingrich's talk, but I don't think what he says is what he means.
I don't think he's going to go for it.
It's a big business. General Electric is one of the payees in this state that gets paid for foster care. You know, they're setting up little institutions and orphanages before Gingrich started talking about it publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Who's getting that money? Big business.
Well, the underlying assumption is that poor people can't be trusted to have their own money. They need some sort of authority that's wiser and smarter to spend their money for them.
Yeah.
And this is just a false assumption. We don't worry about rich people spending. Oh, gee, they'll just spend their money on alcohol and cigarettes.
I think it's not just false, but it's extremely dangerous. You know, it's not different than deciding, well, people of a certain race should all be exterminated. It's the exact same mental pattern.
And also, you have welfare for the rich, which not only goes on, but has been growing and growing and growing, and will continue to grow. So we're not getting rid of welfare. We're going to lose Becky. Anything more you want to say to her before she takes off?
Oh, I just want to thank her for putting out that guaranteed or negative income theory.
Do I get a hug before you go?
And for all your work of exposing art, too.
Yeah. Well.
Come to that hearing on the 26th in Sam Stevens' courtroom, bright and early.
I'll try to be there. And
it should be very entertaining.
Yeah. And it may be refreshing. Has anyone invited 60 Minutes yet?
Give them a call, Linda.
All right.
Nice talking to you.
Thanks. Bye, Becky.
And thank you, Robert, for inviting me on your show.
Hey, Becky, thanks for coming. And we may want you, you know, hey, next time, the sooner the better. You know, you got things to say that even I don't know about. Can you imagine that?
Go figure,
yeah. Bye-bye. So, Linda, now it's just you and me.
You and me, babe.
And you, I wasn't able to hear your show last week. You did this show, I guess, on Friday with your co. Who was the person who you had on the show with you?
Charlotte Corday was our reader.
Charlotte Corday.
Reader, yes.
Yes, a bizarre choice of person, but I guess bathrobe spirit,
well,
Charlotte
Corday.
Well,
it was a bizarre time. We went through this O.J. Simpson verdict without you being in town, Robert, and it just took us back to the French Revolution or something.
I see. Well, I'll forgive you in this case.
Oh, you would have enjoyed it.
Really?
I think so. I thought it was good. Not as many broadsides, but a broad perspective. We were calling it a broader perspective, your show.
Well, I think I understand there's some emergency food board meeting coming up. That
oh, yes. I wanted to announce that the public hearing part of the Emergency Food and Shelter Board, where they're going to hear about who thinks they're qualified to get some FEMA money, which has to be spent on emergency shelter or emergency food. That hearing is at 9 o'clock Thursday.
Where is that?
The Emergency Food and Shelter Board meets at the Red Cross this month.
Where is that?
Usually. Well, it's near the freeway exit just before Dominican Hospital. If you go off, what is that, the SoCal exit, and turn left, it's like the second building. First there's a motel, then there's the Red Cross.
So it's
parking's not always easy, so you want to be a few minutes early if you have to drive, but you can take a bus.
Most of our listeners probably don't even have cars, but
tell me about it.
Yeah. You don't have a car, do you?
No, but I have two thumbs. I still have two thumbs, so they
some say you're all thumbs, Linda.
Yeah, well, that's just a perspective,
yeah.
You know, but as long as one of them works, I'm not grounded.
Well, give me the thumb, but don't give me the finger. I think I better stop this. So anyway, there's an emergency food. What do we call this?
Emergency
group?
Food and Shelter Board. One of the things the Emergency Food and Shelter Board does is decide who gets a little slice of FEMA money. FEMA money.
Is federal money, right?
Not much of this. You want me to? FEMA stands for Federal Emergency.
Don't worry about that.
Management.
Federal Emergency Management Administration.
It pays for some of the free meals and food kitchens and some of the emergency shelter beds. And it can't pay for like transitional or adequate shelter, but it helps provide emergency shelter.
What is the emergency shelter situation here in Santa Cruz in terms of the needs?
Cold. It's really cold out, and there's a lot of scrambling going on right now to see if we can have more, not less, places that are at least legal for people to sleep. But from my point of view,
have there been cutbacks in recent years? I understand that the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program was able, through the Above the Line Community Consortium, a group that got together this spring, to get to fund its summer program, and the Armory will be open this winter. So what's the problem?
One problem is that a lot more people are houseless and cold. You know, that's just, I mean, that's one of the bigger problems. And as we were talking about where the federal budget is going, which is far away from helping poor people in general, you can see that problem's not going to get better.
Hey, we have
any
numbers on those, on how much the problem has increased?
I'll give you my prediction that when the AFDC cuts alone, this is something that affects less than 10% of the population, when they go into effect, we're going to have 1,000 more families because of the fourth of the people on welfare, on family welfare in this county now, aren't going to be able to afford their rent.
Now,
the only reason the others are is because they're getting a break, or they've been in the same place 20 years, or their mommy's helping them, or their boyfriend's covering for them.
Thousand
a
more.
Fourth of us are going to be out there in the streets.
1,000 more added to what previous number?
1,000 families.
Added to?
The figure that has made sense to me since I got to help work on this survey is a few years old, but that figures there's about 2,000 people homeless in our county in the winter.
It
can be identified.
I got a much larger number, 3,000 to 5,000 from 1988 anyway. But that was a federal figure.
That was a federal figure?
Well, it was from the Social Security Administration, I believe.
Well, I helped do one of the local surveys, and I can vouch for the quality control, because that was my job, is finding volunteers.
Human Resources Agency, I'm sorry, not the Social Security Administration.
I believe it. I mean, they have over 900 identified school children who are in school and homeless. Most of the times my kids have been homeless. School is not really easy. A lot of kids don't get to do public school at all if they're homeless, or if they're likely to be in and out of homelessness. The homeschool, isn't that funny? Homeless children get to do homeschool more and more. Anyway, so in the city of Santa Cruz, there's a possibility, but I don't think it's politically the likelihood, that some of the free spaces to sleep, like the campsite, are going to vanish.
Oh, yeah. Well, right now, that is not a possibility. That is a certainty.
It's not a certainty. It's only certain if the people who have to sleep out there and the people who are their friends say nothing and do nothing.
Well, that's what they're going to do. Up to now, that's what they've done, and I've seen no indication of anything else. The Citizens Committee for the Homeless will build community house starting in December. The City Council will make noises about it, and there is an open-air shelter meeting, by the way, happening, I guess, the Kennedy Committee meets this week. Scott Kennedy, member of the City Council, is doing an open-air shelter subcommittee meeting, which is trying to.
He hasn't returned my phone calls, Robert. I'm starting to experience him the way you claim.
Yeah, he told me he was going to return my calls, too, and sad to say, he has not. The meeting, however, is at the Civic Auditorium on Friday, by the way, of the Above the Line Community Consortium. If people are interested, that's at 11:30 at the Civic Auditorium on Friday. This is the big group that merchants, activists, and social service providers who...
And anyone who cares, it's not an exclusive...
Right. They're mainly... Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
According to the coordinator of it, Kimberly Carter, the main concern is youth shelter. They're fundamentally fundraisers for social services, but they're trying to draw in different segments of the community, and they've started a program which they put in a video they showed around to merchants, and they're trying to get merchants to solicit money for this winter youth shelter, which I'm told, by the way, I talked to Kimberly Carter, the coordinator, this morning, they're having trouble with in terms of the government regulations on zoning that'll slow them down.
Well, they should be at this FEMA board meeting, too. The city's zoning ordinances are all appealable. So if they're talking about local impediments. Those are all fixable.
So we're talking about, when we're talking about the Emergency Food and Shelter Board meeting on what date?
The Emergency Food and Shelter Board meets at 9 on Thursday, this Thursday.
So Thursday at 9 at the Red Cross Building, Friday at 11:30 at the Civic Auditorium. This week you can check out, you know, face-to-face and up-close the kinds of participants and the poverty pimping that goes on in our community.
A chance to ask direct questions of the people who provide services or say they do.
Right. I guess those who want to speak out on behalf of the needs of poor on the streets are really the voice of people who are poor is what's needed at these hearings.
Yeah.
And
like what Gina and Mark were doing last season?
Talking about, yeah, Marathon Mark and Gem Eyes Gina.
That we need people that can afford to take those kind of risks and just be honest and do it in public.
We're still hoping to get Gina on the air here. Gina was had a problem at the open-air shelter. Did you hear anything about what happened with that?
No,
she was expelled from the open-air shelter, and she claimed that that she was assaulted and then expelled by, essentially through a cronyism process.
Well, you know what else I heard? Hopefully this is an unrelated, different incident or rumor, but I heard that a woman from who was homeless and slept at the campsite who went to get a restraining order against someone else that has to sleep there has to wait over 2 weeks for an appointment at one of the crisis centers, which I'm not going to name, but I'm going to check it down.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Yep. That should be within 3 hours of the complaint. This community can do that.
Mm. Yeah, well, in all fairness to Paul Merceau, who is the executive director of the open-air shelter, or perhaps it's the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, or maybe it's both.
ISSP.
I'm a little confused. And also ISSP. These are all the programs that essentially help homeless people out at River and Highway 1. I haven't heard any more from Gina on Gina's case. I just got back into town, and she may not actually be in town. And I talked to Paul this morning to try to get an update on what was going on out there, and what did he tell me? He told me, hang on here, he had some things to say. The Kennedy Subcommittee meets on the 20th at noon at the City Manager's Conference Room, for those of you who are interested. This is the subcommittee that's specifically concerned with what's going to happen to the back 40, what's going to happen to the open-air shelter. The plan now is to, quote, move it, but where? Nobody has a place, nobody has a property,
nobody has
permission.
There's parks in every neighborhood.
Doesn't matter.
All you have to do is lift the fucking curfew and flush the toilets once in a while.
Yeah, but they're not...
Nobody's ready to face that, but that's easy. That's the easy solution.
Sure it is.
And there are better ones.
Yeah.
So I hope some real people will come to that meeting you just mentioned.
Yeah, well, I think that it's a lot of brouhaha about nothing. They're not going to move it anywhere. They're going to displace it. But perhaps not. I mean, Kennedy seems genuinely concerned, and I talked about this issue a week ago, or a week and a half ago when I was on. Again, for those who are interested in that meeting, that's on the 20th, October 20th at noon at the City Manager's Conference Room, and I'll be mentioning that again. And while I'm mentioning meetings today, the Citizens Police Review Board is meeting at 5 o'clock. That's their one meeting a month. They meet the second Monday of every month, and they're going to be doing their thing. I guess I may show up there. I don't know. The prospect is depressing and enervating, but I may come anyway. The police review board is...
If you do go, Robert, I would like to mooch a ride of transport. I'd like to go if I can. I hear that the board members are finally getting tired of walking back and forth between wherever they're allowed to meet in public and the police department's so-called private security
room. Oh, yeah.
So I want to watch the ballet.
Yeah, you mentioned to me that there was an article in the Saturday Sentinel regarding police review.
Yeah.
And actually, I have a Sentinel here, but that's the Saturday, September 30th Sentinel. So if I find the appropriate Sentinel, I might be able to...
Well, it's hardly worth looking for. But I can recap the half of the article that I was lucky enough to get to read.
Why don't you go ahead and do that?
Basically, refers to Margaret Marr as a critic, although I thought her criticism was very even-handed and correct, I agreed. And the headline says something like, review board bogged down in details. A little more succinct, but no more pungent. And it goes on to talk about how they've spent the last year working these things out. And it does talk about that they're in fear of the police department, I think.
We have a big problem with the review board has been that they, well, the original ratifying act is so weak that they can't do anything, even if they wanted to, but they're also being further hobbled by actions by the
Well, if they can't learn to stand up to the maker of their thing and go back to city council and feel casual and comfortable and equanimous about it, how are they going to learn to stand up to the police department, who has a lot better bureaucracy training, I hope, than the council members?
Well, I don't seem to have the Saturday paper here, but that's okay. I have lots of other papers here.
Yeah.
And again, people are interested. I encourage you to go check out the Citizens Police Review Board, which is happening today at 5 at City Hall, which is...
I'd like to make a good comment on the air to kind of balance out my own opinions here, is that I have felt the chair of that review committee attempting to be very open-minded and open procedurally. So... You know, you don't feel like you're wasting your time and being silenced. If you visit, they'll let you participate.
Uh-huh. Well, it's, yeah, it'd be nice. I mean, openness is, they do allow a certain openness, although as I mentioned to my viewers, I had to literally risk arrest to get to a subcommittee meeting about 2 weeks ago. They were all set to dump the Brown Act and just ignore.
Oh, you should have arrested them. Can a citizen's arrest apply to 5 people?
Of course.
Cool.
Good luck. Yeah. The that could be done. One time David tried to arrest a police officer, and he, of course, was jailed for it back when the city council, under the illegal leadership of Neil Coonerty, at least in this particular instance, and his henchman, RoboCop Mike Rotkin, excluded and then locked out dozens of people from city council meeting after some people in the audience chanted "homes, not jails" back in 1993.
It's a shame you have to pass things like the Brown Act in order to enact democracy when that's what those guys are elected to in the first place.
Well, I have any other announcements you want to make, Linda, or thoughts you want to give us?
Yeah, one more police thing. I was pleased to get to hear Steve Belcher firsthand instead of just the Sentinel version, talking about how Santa Cruz is different from L.A. when it comes to police violence, but I hope that in the future we can get more details on that.
I suppose it depends on who you talk to. I have talked to people who have suffered violence at the hands of the police, and I mean locally and recently, and not in the bad old days, not under Chief Bassett in the so-called good bad old days, but in the new bad old days under Steve Belcher. And I don't just mean somebody his kicking Robert Flory in the side or on the foot or on the leg when he was lying down in a peaceful demonstration on Pacific Avenue.
Was that before or after he was a police chief?
That was before he was police chief. He may have been acting police chief, but it was before he was officially police chief. But
see, that's what I'm saying, Robert. I've seen the police get better at a few things, but I don't see them why they should be out there tooting their own whistle quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you watch their relationship to the review board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like you, I've been hearing about these terrible things that happen. You know, not just the police, but the police need to know better. But I'm concerned about 2 or 3 stories from the park police, what do you call it, Parks and Rec car.
Oh yeah, the Rangers.
They like your brown shirt, green shirt, whatever the color this year.
Well,
the park rangers are dangerous, and they need to be exposed.
Mm-hmm. But wait, you've heard some more information, have you?
Yeah, this is about camping and bowling people and taking their possessions, you know. Sounds like 91 or something.
Well, hopefully I'll be able to get some interviews with people who actually have suffered this, and I've gotten some information from people on the streets about this, which was played in 2 tapes in the last 2 shows when I was away, and hopefully I'll be getting more information. The Hound Dog the Host's table, which has kind of been away for the last week and a half, I'm not sure if it's going to be reinstituted, since the people running it are kind of grounded for different reasons. But people who are interested in the Hound Dog, the Host table, who want to volunteer to help, should give a call at 423-4833, which is my Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom number. And, you know, we can try to set it up again. I think you have an incoming call there, Linda.
I would like to say one thing before I leave you to get it. And people that have done some time at that table, if they have the opportunity, might catch any one public meetings where homeless and camping is being discussed this week. That would be a wonderful thing to have their voice.
Yeah, campers show up at the meetings, whether it be at police review today at 5, whether it be at city council tomorrow at oral communications at 7, whether it be at your emergency food Red Cross meeting at 9 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, whether it be at the Friday's meeting of what's happening on Friday, the Above the Line Community Consortium at 11:30 in the morning at the Civic Auditorium. So I'm going to let you go.
Thank you.
All right, Linda.
Bye from Housing Now.
Bye-bye.
And it's true, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Call-in is now up to you, and lines are open. Your number to call, our number, is 427-3772. And we're going to give you a kind of a break now for a bit. First, we'll allow a moment or two for people to call in quickly in case you have any strong reactions, weak reactions, or reactions whatsoever to what's been said by badass Becky, she doesn't call herself that, I call her that, or Lighthouse Linda, or what's something I've said. Hearing no callers, I'm now going to turn to some comedy. We've had enough of this serious stuff. I'm going to play a little of the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe from Berkeley. Their latest tape. I haven't even heard this tape, so we're both going to be hearing it together for the first time. Again, mostly they cover Berkeley topics, but the topics are sufficiently universal in the sense that Santa Cruz is doing its own anti-homeless show that I think we can find it interesting. Here we go, the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe.
Another day, another ABC World Nightly News broadcast, right?
I think it went pretty well tonight, Peter. Nice transition from O.J. to Tonya Harding, by the way.
Very smooth. You were pretty credible yourself, old boy.
Well, anybody expecting a mouse?
A mouse? What are you talking about?
Well, yeah, there's a guy in a mouse costume out here in the hall. He says he owns the place?
Oh, let him in. It's probably a singing telegram or something. It must be somebody's birthday. Oh, damn, it's good to ditch this hairpiece.
Hello, I'm Mickey Mouse, and I'm here to welcome you to the happiest place on Earth.
Why's that?
Why? Because we own you.
Very cute. You want an autograph or something? Yeah, I think it's Connie Chung in there.
No, I'm serious. Welcome to the happiest place on Earth.
What's he talking about?
It's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow in the happiest place on Earth.
Look, nice outfit and all that, but it's a little crowded backstage here, and we'd appreciate it.
It's a small world after all.
That's it. Stagehand, 86th the road. It's giving me the creeps.
I can't do that, you see. That's the new news director.
What?
The new news director. It has something to do with the Eisner deal.
What the hell are you talking about?
$19 billion? Disney buys out capital cities? You read the papers?
Well, look, I don't have much time to keep up with the... Hey, what's with these giant teacups?
That's the new set, sir.
Hey, where do you want this stuff? Wait a minute. Don't bring that crap in here.
The world is a carousel of color. Wonderful, wonderful color.
You can't be serious. You want me to broadcast the world nightly news from a giant teacup?
But try to stay calm, sir. It's actually a lot nicer than the Pirates of the Caribbean set the morning show people have to deal with.
Just sign here for delivery, sir. This is an outrage. This does not suit the dignity with which we must meet our responsibility to the American...
Justice. Spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
This is a travesty. He's passing out a little musketeer hat.
You're part of the Mickey Mouse Club now.
One more word out of that rodent and I'll quit my contract.
Hold it. Mr. Mouse.
Call me Mickey.
Sure thing, Mickey. Could you excuse us a minute here?
Now it's time to say goodbye to all our company.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mickey.
And my dear,
listen, Peter.
I can't wear a Mouseketeer's hat on the air.
Just listen for a minute, Peter. We're talking Disney here. These people don't mess around.
But I can't bear it. Reading about telecommunications mergers with a pair of mouse ears on my head? No. I've got to quit my contract. Maybe I should retire.
That's just what they want you to do. They'd love to cartoon animate the whole damn broadcast.
You mean cartoons?
Think about it. How much do you have to pay a cartoon? Go on. Put on the Mouseketeer hat. Just give it a try.
Well, okay, I guess you're right. How do I look?
You look fine. Just fine. We'll get one that works with the toupee and we'll be in business.
And the big teacups?
Nobody will even notice. The mouse ears, the giant teacups, we'll all get used to that stuff in no time.
Oh, I guess you're right.
Maybe even pick up a younger audience.
Some of the MTV crowd?
Younger than that.
If only I could be sure about these mouse ears. I mean, what would Walter Cronkite say?
Pete, he'd be sucking off the guy in the mouse suit.
I guess you're right.
Let's hold a banner high, 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 high. Come along and sing the song and join the jamboree. MIT, KEY, WOP.
Hi, kids and parents all over America! Welcome to the ABC Evening News! I'm Mickey Mouse! Ha ha ha! The new counterterrorism bill proposed by President Clinton is now making its way through Congress! The bill will reportedly help America by making things really yucky for terrorists! Our reporter Dumbo has more on that! Ha ha! Dumbo?
Thanks, Mickey. Key congressional leaders are getting behind President Clinton's new counterterrorism bill. The bill is expected to make Americans much safer from terrorist attacks such as the Oklahoma City bombing. And how will it do that? Well, by giving the police and the FBI the additional powers they need to protect us. And now back to you, Mickey.
Thanks, Dumbo! In other news tonight, Disney World in Florida announced that the theme park will soon be opening a new wing called OJ Land. More on that from our reporter, Dumbo.
Thanks, Mickey. Jump into a whiteboard Bronco and cruise through OJ Land. Yep, that's the new ride at Disney World. Score a touchdown as you cruise through an airport festooned with bloody gloves. Stop for a bite to eat in the Beverly Hills restaurant as you listen to Nicole's cries on the 911 tape. It's a fascinating trip through OJ Land, and it's all waiting for you here at Disney World.
Thanks, Dumbo! Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs visited the White House today and had tea with First Lady Hillary Clinton. Our reporter Dumbo has more on that.
It was a really rocking good time this morning as Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs descended upon the White House and had tea in the Rose Garden with First Lady Hillary Clinton. As Dopey and Grumpy broke out into a chorus of hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to work we go, First Lady commented that something should be done about Sneezy's cold, and that brought up the subject of health care, and Snow White, always an advocate of the poor and disenfranchised, pointed out that large numbers of dwarves across the nation have no health insurance at all, and you know what? Why, First Lady Clinton, she promised to do something about it. Oh, back to you, Mickey.
In Newport News, Virginia today, our nation launched its newest nuclear submarine, the Greenville. Our reporter Dumbo is there and files this report.
Thanks, Mickey. The Greenville is a brand new nuclear-powered attack submarine about a zillion feet long and loaded with all kinds of missiles and nukes and bombs and neat stuff like that. And it's built at a cost of $200 billion. It was launched today in Newport News, Virginia, and christened by our nation's poet laureate, Dr. Seuss. Also on hand was Senator Goofy, Republican Virginia, chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee.
Americans can sleep better tonight knowing that this fine new addition to our nation's arsenal is keeping them safe from third world thugs like Saddam Hussein.
The Greenville will join the U.S. fleet off the coast of Cuba next week. Back to you, Mickey.
Thanks, Dumbo. And that's the news tonight. I'm Mickey Mouse, and so long from all of us here at ABC News.
And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're listening to Bathrobe Spear Robert Morris and Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides, our twice-weekly show, Civil Rights for the Poor, Civil Rights for All of Us, Life on the Streets. These are the subjects that we follow in this show. You've just been listening to the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe from Berkeley. We'll hear a little bit more from them later. I'm going to return now to the newspaper reading part of our show, and I want to point out also that in case you want to do a little singing along with Mickey, phone lines are open. We're at 427-3772. We are, of course, also at 96.3 FM on your dial, Free Radio Santa Cruz. What have we got here? Well, we heard about a little of the anti-terrorism bill from Uncle Mickey there, from Free Radio Berkeley. I've also got an interesting article from the San Francisco Chronicle from October 3rd, which some of you may have seen already. Some good news for once. Unlikely partners stall anti-terrorism bill. And I'll read a little bit of that to you. Broad new counterterrorism legislation that was considered certain to become law earlier this year has been derailed by an unusual coalition of conservative Republicans and civil libertarian Democrats in the House of Representatives. In June, less than 2 months after the bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City, the legislation sailed through the full Senate and the House Judiciary Committee with little opposition. It had been pushed by President Clinton and endorsed by Republican and Democratic leaders in both chambers. But since then, the legislation has stalled, a casualty of a political mood swing in Congress. Hearings in August and September about the deadly standoffs by federal agents with the Branch Davidian cult near Waco, Texas, and a white separatist, Randy Weaver, at Ruby Ridge in Idaho, have nurtured a new skepticism, particularly among conservative Republicans and newer lawmakers who are reluctant to hand over broad new powers to law enforcement officials. Since the Oklahoma City bombing, we've had hearings on Waco and Ruby Ridge, which demonstrate the ability of the federal government to overreach, said Laura Murphy, director of the Washington office of the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union. The thinking, which has crossed party lines, is that if law enforcement can do these things without a counterterrorist bill, imagine what would happen with one. Republican aides in the House said the legislation had not been introduced on the floor in recent weeks because their private counts showed it would be defeated. The only hope now for passage would be for a dramatically scaled back version. The legislation, which passed the Senate by the lopsided vote of 91-8, would give law enforcement officials vast new authority to plant wiretaps, make it easier for the government to deport illegal immigrants suspected of terrorism without informing them of all the evidence against them, expand the role of the military in certain kinds of cases, and limit most death row prisoners to one appeal in federal court. 2 weeks after the Senate action, a similar measure was approved by the House Judiciary Committee by a vote of 23-12. The House measure also voted to classify as a terrorist act almost any crime in which a gun was used. So this is good news. The anti-terrorism bill is, for the moment, not apparently on the agenda, although I haven't done any independent research on this, and if anybody has any information about this that's more up to date, please give me a call at 427-3772. I'd like to know about it. Another piece of good news, which at least one of our listeners and our other disabled listeners might be interested in hearing, is an article the day before from the San Francisco Examiner of October 2nd. Topless Club agrees to disabled access. This is a special news brief for Christina, who has been the mainstay of the Hound Dog, the host's table. She hasn't been at it recently, but she's been out there with her wheelchair, wheeling around, following those hosts up and down the mall to make sure that they're treating people, it's hard to say that they treat people according to the downtown ordinances and even occasionally in excess of the downtown ordinances, which make it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk here in Santa Cruz if you're 10 feet from a shop, which make it illegal to peacefully ask for spare change from a seated position, which make it illegal to have an object on the sidewalk after dark. And the downtown hosts are also engaged in assailing such subversive activities as hacky sack in the wrong place, dog on the mole, riding your bike the wrong way, these sorts of things. Actually, I haven't seen them go after bicyclists. I don't wish to be... Oh, boy. I hope you've been hearing me. Here's a little more volume for you. Anyway, the Christina has been really one of the lead figures in the Hound Dog, the Host table, along with Stubborn Heart Star. And just here's a little kind of thumbs up for her. A South of Market San Francisco topless club has averted an inspection by the city's tough handicapped access cops by agreeing to remodel its premises to accommodate the disabled. The club will soon be accessible to both disabled clients and performers, said Carla Johnson, secretary of the Access Appeals Commission. The commission had considered rejecting the Gold Club's request for a disabled access variance and had insisted on a visit to the club at 650 Howard Street. The inspection was to have taken place Friday. Claiming unreasonable hardship, the club had applied for an exemption from having to provide a level front sidewalk as well as access to basement dressing rooms and restrooms. On the eve of the inspection, Johnson received a permit application from the Gold Club, which showed they intended to make the required changes. She then called off the visit. At a September 13th hearing, wheelbound Commissioner Terry Hogan complained that the 1-inch-per-foot incline at the club's front entrance was so steep that I can't get up the slope. To meet handicap requirements, the slope must not exceed a quarter inch per foot, Johnson said. Johnson said the change would force the club to dig up the sidewalk to provide a more level landing at the front door. The club must also install lockers and dressing rooms for performers on the ground floor. Now they're in the basement. You could have a disabled stripper, Johnson said. The building code does not specifically address adult entertainment facilities. Gold Club said it would be closed several weeks to complete the necessary job. The club has 90 days to finish the job. In a recent advertisement, the Gold Club ballyhooed itself as San Francisco's newest and largest world-class gentlemen's club, featuring 10 centerfolds, an adult film star, and complimentary all-you-can-eat buffet from 11:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. Hey, I must be able to get up there fast. Learning that the on-site inspection was canceled, Commissioner Hogan said, "I'm so disappointed. This was my first opportunity to go to a topless club." Not that all you folks in wheelchairs are hot to go to these topless clubs, but I believe in equal access. I have done very little on rights of the disabled here in Santa Cruz, and I think that's quite pertinent. You don't have so many obviously disabled homeless people because I don't know how long you last in the outdoors if you're disabled, what you do. And that's really a subject I'd like to discuss further on the air. If any disabled people who know about disabled homeless people want to come in and be on the air, please give me a call at 423-4833. Call on the air right now at 427-3772. Our lines are open. Or show up at Taco Bell at 9:45 on Friday. I'll be there looking for people who are interested in showing up and being on the show. One thing about the O.J. trial, which I didn't follow very closely and don't have too much to say about, is the spotlight it has thrown on police abuse nationally. That's the one certainly positive aspect of the trial that I'm really grateful for. Particularly in the media, stories have been showing up not just about Mark Furman, who let it all belch out or puke out, but Furman, of course, is the L.A. cop who perjured himself on the stand and essentially, not quite single-handedly, but certainly was responsible for making the prosecution's case less credible than it could have been. He admitted to beatings, terrorizing black people, numerous extra-legal, brutal activities on the force, which is more important than his racism. His racism is, we're all racist here, pretty much. I'm afraid most of the country is, myself included. I think a lot of us who claim we aren't racist are racist, that the poison of fear and hatred, it's pretty deep. To root it out, you really have to engage in not just mea culpas before you go to bed. You have to really change your way of life and regularly and intimately begin to relate to people of different races and backgrounds so that your relationships change. And I don't think I've done that with the kind of single-minded purpose that would really extirpate the racism in me. And it's an ongoing virus. It's something that you pick up just by being in the society, by growing up here, by living here. Anyway, the issue is not racism. The issue is, the issue certainly is racism, but it's also, and more importantly, police abuse. And of course, police abuse on the basis of racism and the basis of political persuasion, the basis of gender, and the basis of class. And that's even more, I would say, even more pervasive, that poor people, whatever their color, are sure to get the shit from the cops. And they do from the society institutionally by institutionalized anti-homeless laws. But anyway, the media has been covering that with at least a seasonal flash-in-the-pan interest. And the San Francisco Examiner of October 8th of yesterday has a story, A Plague of Bad Cops. Actually, it's a nationwide story. From the Dallas Morning News. And it's by Ed Timms, and I'm going to kind of pick and choose a few things out of here, read a little of this. Retired Los Angeles detective Mark Furman, caught in a lie during the O.J. Simpson trial, is the current poster child for questionable police practices and community relations. But across the nation, the reputations of other police officers, federal agents, and prosecutors are also under attack. They're accused of lying in the courtroom, falsifying or withholding evidence, corruption, racism, physical abuse, or even murder. In the same city, federal prosecutors, in Philadelphia, former police